Welcome back to Power Hour, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so very much for joining us. Caring about your world. Stock market is in the red. 127 points. All the European and most of the European and the Asian markets were down. A little bit of, when the United States gets a cough, the rest of the world gets a cold or whatever they say. You know, it just is crazy, absolutely crazy stuff going on. And I am so thrilled to have joining us today a gentleman who is probably one of the best in the world to help us understand what's happening. And that is James Corbett. James Corbett has the Corbett Report, and he also writes for the International Forecaster. He is always ahead of the curve in helping us to understand, and we're so thrilled to have him join us today. Thank you so much, James, for joining us in the Power Hour.
It is absolutely a pleasure to be here with you and your listeners, Joyce, and I only hope that I can help to shed some understanding about what's happening right now with this talk of government shutdown.
I have not talked to one person who doesn't want it to shut down. I mean, let's just shut it all down, start all over again, and figure this whole thing out. That's kind of my attitude. How do you see this proposed alleged government shutdown, sir?
Well, I couldn't agree with that sentiment anymore if I possibly tried. If only it would be a government shutdown of the type that they're alleging is going to happen. If only that actually meant that the government would shut down and that the people across America could actually come together through peaceful, voluntary interactions to find ways to solve their problems without the big stick of government intruding on their lives. But unfortunately, as I'm sure many of your listeners are already aware, that is not what we're really talking about here. When we're talking about government shutdown, what we're really talking about is just a small section. Some of the low-level federal employees will be furloughed if and when this goes through. And in fact, it's not even 100% certain that this is going to happen yet. And if it does, all bets are that it will last at best a few days, and then things will be back to normal, back to business as usual. And I think business is the best way to underline this, because all of this is really just a political charade that is being played out right now for the purposes of scoring points with each of the party's bases, and it has absolutely nothing to do with actually resolving any of the crises that are happening at a systemic level in the American government or economy right now. And unfortunately, this hype is spilling out into the markets and actually affecting people's bottom lines at this point. But again, it is smoke and mirrors and hype and illusion.
Okay, help us understand then what this is allegedly all about, because they have all the money in the world to do with whatever they want to do. They can lose $3 trillion at a shot, you know, according to Rumsfeld of the Pentagon. They can just lose all this money, but somehow we've got to take care of these, you know, these non-essential people and remove them at their jobs for a show, which in reality, they all get their money back retrospectively anyway, retroactively should it happen. So what is this game about here? What are we looking at? Because we want to look beyond the, oh my gosh, it's going to be over by midnight tonight.
Exactly right. And just to put that in perspective for people who might have been caught up in that hype that the government and certainly the media have been feeding into for obvious reasons, just to put that in perspective, they're talking about the first government shutdown in 17 years, which would technically be correct. But the part of that that they leave out would be that it would be the 18th government shutdown since 1970. So it is not an uncommon thing for this to happen. And in the previous incidents of this, which were recently outlined even in the Washington Post, you can go and look through. The average is at least 2 or 3 days of shutdown. It's been as much as 21 days back when it happened last under Clinton back in 95. But this is not an absolutely unprecedented thing that some of the people who are talking about this and hyping it up are trying to make it seem. In fact, we even had one of the Democratic senators coming out and basically saying this is the worst thing to happen to the Union since the Civil War, which is just the type of hyperbole that unfortunately scores well with voters at the voting booth, certainly people who were in the core party base, but has no bearing on reality. So let's put it in perspective that way. This is not an unusual phenomenon. As to why this is happening, I mean, the ostensible reason is that the government certainly can and has and does print as much money as it wants at any time it wants, but there are theoretical limitations on this and restrictions that are really just trappings and ornaments, because ultimately yes, they are going to raise the debt limit on the federal government. That is, I mean, it's a foregone conclusion that they are not going to default on the U.S. government debt. It's just a question of how long they drag this out and what political footballs they can kick around in the meantime. But the core issue here is the federal the debt ceiling, the debt limit that is basically a restriction on how much the federal government can go into debt. It's every single time that the government nears this debt ceiling, Congress just passes another rubber stamp to approve X more trillion dollars that the government can go into debt, and it continues going on its merry way. And of course, we saw this happen a couple of years ago with the debt ceiling brouhaha, which did at that time result in a downgrading of the U.S. government debt, which is actually a fairly serious consequence, but I think had its own political implications. But what we're talking about here is basically this: they're rubbing up against this debt ceiling limit again. They can't at least theoretically just to print their way out of it until they get this rubber stamp from Congress. And so Congress is using this as a pressure point to once again kick around the political football of Obamacare, which is in many ways already a done deal. And in fact, starting October 1st, starting tomorrow, they're going to start accepting people into the insurance programs for the real kickoff of Obamacare. Whether people like it or not, it's going to be starting tomorrow, whether there's a government shutdown or not, actually. So that's already a done deal. But this will theoretically, perhaps, maybe they'll be able to postpone Obamacare's implementation for one more year. But that's basically what this boils down to. And as I say, it really is a lot of political smoke and mirrors, because when you actually look at the various government services that are going to continue to operate as normal during this supposed shutdown, it's pretty much across the board. Things will be business as usual, from the air traffic controllers to the U.S. Postal Service to the Supreme Court to Homeland Security, of course, and Border Patrol and Secret Service and all of those agencies doing what they do best. And of course, the IRS will continue to be hounding people. So all of these important agencies that work to keep Americans safe and happy and secure will continue doing their abysmal job of doing exactly that. So once again, this is largely hype that is it is having an effect on the market, but I don't think people should be putting too much stock or faith in this as a process.
I think this is part of it's the Republicans versus Democrat kind of charade. It's just part of that whole thing that we have to keep this game going. And I think everybody can probably be reassured that the president's dogs will still be able to be transported vis-a-vis a very expensive helicopter aircraft. All that kind of stuff will go on. The 27 fireplaces in the White House will probably still be utilized. I mean, this is all about trying to make the people think that this charade is real. And I do believe it is all charade. The whole financial system is not what we think it is. You know, I'd like for, and by the way, if you want to know what's not what you think it is, in the Corbett Report, if you went to the CorbettReport.com and you checked out, or you were a subscriber to the report, you would find out five people you won't believe work with the CIA. Now, I'm not going to tell the story because you need to be a subscriber to this, but I'm going to tell you that one of them, I'll tell you just one of them, was Julia Child. Now, how interesting. Things you don't know, you don't realize, you don't understand, and you are lied to, lied about. Things that are lied about to you to keep this charade going. And speaking of charade, I'd like to talk about the world financial situation, because everybody around the world now seems to be having a hiccup because of the United States' alleged going dark at night, you know, going dark at midnight kind of situation. And let's look at Italy, because Italy, which is not really undercapitalized, but Italy's got a real problem right now. And if they don't adhere to whatever Berlusconi wants, there's people that want to shut down Italy. What is going on?
That's an excellent question, and to be honest, the Italian situation is just unfolding quickly enough that I haven't been keeping my eye on it until now it's exploding all of a sudden. But you're exactly right. Apparently Berlusconi has called for the resignation of ministers of the party that he's a member of, the PDL. And this has caused this massive government destabilization that's happening right now and is continuing to play out. Apparently now Reuters is reporting that 20 senators from his party are preparing to create a new party if Berlusconi doesn't soften his stance against the prime minister. So this is still very much in flux, but suffice it to say, the Italian government right now is in a bit of a shambles. And this, of course, is affecting the Italian bonds. We're starting to see the yields ramping right now. So we're starting to see some destabilization in one of those soft targets in the Eurozone, which itself, I mean, is still very much on life support. And we haven't been hearing a lot out of the Eurozone for the last few months because of the German election cycle. And now that that Merkel is back as the Chancellor of Germany once again, and the German government is kicking back into politics as usual, I think we're going to be hearing a lot more about the Eurozone in the coming weeks and months, as it looks like Greece is going to need another bailout. And now who knows what's happening with Italy right now. But whatever is happening, it is affecting the euro. It is affecting Italian bond yields right now. And it looks like a pretty dire situation is developing if the Italian government can't get things back under control really quickly.
It really is. And I do think that, I talked to somebody in Italy and they said basically sort of the mafia is calling its chits right now. And that's what it's all about, is that, you know, this they're even talking about bail-ins. And we're not quite sure what's going on around the world, but the fear is starting to emanate here that there might be some bail-ins. You know, GoldSeek.com did a story about a Panama bank holiday, which has turned out not to be accurate. We had a lot of people in Panama that said, that is not even true. That's not what happened here. But there is this financial fear that is starting to pervade a lot of people in the banking system and wanting to pull their money out of the banks. And I'm not talking about just people that listen to the Power Hour or Genesis. But a lot of people are very concerned about the instability in banks, vis-a-vis or possibly regarding the bail-ins. We'll be back with James Corbett after this four-minute break. The Corbett Report, Corbett Report. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. 4 minutes, Power Up. Welcome back to Power Hour. Thank you for joining us. Caring about your world, doing the next right and honorable thing, 24 minutes after the hour. Joining us today is James Corbett. I personally cannot get enough of James Corbett. And if you cannot get enough, then go to CorbettReport.com, Corbett. He also has a number of DVDs that are available, as well as they can hear your YouTube or your channel, television channel. How do they see that?
Well, actually, good question. Unfortunately, recently that has been taken off. That was on free satellite TV in Europe until very recently, but unfortunately, the people who were airing that had to take it off. So they didn't have enough funds, I think, to keep that on the air. So unfortunately, I'm no longer on free satellite TV in Europe, but I was until very recently. People can go back in time and watch it then. But no, okay. But of course, all of my work is available free online, and all of it is accessible through CorbettReport.com. So I hope people will at least go and check it out. Literally thousands of hours of audio and video media that are available there for free download.
Yes, please, please. You guys, you will never get enough of James Corbett. All right, well, we're talking about bail-ins. The fear is, could what happened to Cyprus happen here? Could it happen in Italy? Can it happen anywhere else? What is the justification for bail-ins, given the fact that we all sort of believe this phony idea that when we put money in the bank had some money. But now we're understanding the bank has no money and they want us to help support the banks. This makes no sense.
It doesn't if you were coming at it as a rational human being rather than as a bankster whose very raison d'etre was to try to draw out as much blood from the system as possible. But unfortunately, we are living in such a system. And in a system where money is literally created as debt that is owed directly back to the banksters who created out of nothing, such a system is completely untenable. And we start to find all of these types of games that are played behind the scenes, like the bail-ins. And when you really think about it, I mean, the bail-in is only slightly more egregious than the bailout idea, the idea that people across the nation will be asked to pay tax dollars in order to fund the bailouts of banks that have gone belly up from basically gambling with their customers' money, which is essentially what the 2008 meltdown was all about, with the rise of these derivatives and the attendant risk of the meltdown of the entire global economy, because the banks were basically up to their eyeballs in this imaginary phony debt that they'd basically gambled their way into. So this is kind of the new normal that we're living in. And unfortunately, the bail-in is the new part of the new normal that that we're being asked to accept right now. And we saw it actually happen in Cyprus. And that is unfortunately only, I think, the thin edge of the wedge, because that does provide the actual living, breathing example that people can point to and use as a case precedent in the future. But it's important to know that the banking industry and the central bank of central banks, the Bank for International Settlements, have been talking about this idea of bail-ins for years now. And in fact, just earlier this year, I did a report for Global Research TV where I talked about this bail-in regime that's going on right now, and talked about the Financial Stability Board, which is an adjunct of the Bank for International Settlements. It was actually created by the G20 in the wake of the 2008 meltdown as a way to kind of bring banks across the world together to create more stable banking norms and practices and what have you. And they have come out with white papers and been working on working groups to try to put together and formalize procedures for bail-ins. And this has been going on since at least 2010, that I was able to find a white paper from the Bank for International Settlements talking about bail-ins of Tier 1 and Tier 2 bank capital. Private sector entities like KPMG have issued reports talking about bail-ins. They did so last year before the Cyprus thing even hit. And unfortunately, perhaps most worryingly, earlier this year, we saw the government of Canada release a proposed budget that included wording that basically the possibility of bail-in regimes in the case of banking failures. So again, this is something that's already being hardwired into the financial framework from behind the scenes. And we already now have the case example of Cyprus. So I think in the wake of future banking collapses, we are more likely than not to see this playing out elsewhere around the world. And it might not be hitting home in the United States quite yet, but I think that this is the type of ticking time bomb in the that's sitting underneath the global economy, and especially under the big six banks in the United States, which have untold trillions and trillions, hundreds of trillions, some estimates up to $250 billion in this fake, phony derivative value money that is not money at all. It's really just bets, and it's not worth the paper that it's written on, basically. So this is the big ticking time bomb, and unfortunately, the idea that that the people who put their money in the banks are then going to be asked to bail out the banks is just part of the new normal that we're being asked to accept.
The new normal. I mean, can you spell fraud? What I'd like to do is I'd like to ask after the break to our guest, James Corbett, how do they do this? According to banking regulations, just take money from the depositors. How does this work? We'll be back. 3 minutes. Stay tuned to the Power Hour. Welcome back to Power Hour. Thank you for joining us. 33 minutes after the hour. This Thursday, we're going to be joined by Ellen Brown, attorney Ellen Brown. She is going to discuss a lot of the out-of-control finances of the publicly owned banks and why she believes that state banks are the answer. So we'll be talking to Ellen Brown on Thursday. You get the real deal information here. You've got people like James Corbett telling you the way it really is, not the phony story of, gee, we need to take your money to keep this bank afloat. And that's pretty much what they're saying. But let me just say that we need you to help keep the Power Hour afloat also. So please purchase from the Power Mall. If you purchase from the Power Mall, you keep us in business. That's how we do it. We don't take any sponsors here so that we can say what we want to say. Grown by Nature is on special. If you've never tried these natural vitamins, they're not chemical, they're natural. Check it out. They're on special. Dr. Nick Begich's books and DVDs are on special. Dr. Sherry Rogers, Cancer Free by Bill Henderson, North American Urban Spice, and Beyond Health are all on special at the Power Mall. Call us at 877-817-9829, 877-817-9829, or go to thepowermall.com. CorbettReport.com, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, report.com. James Corbett is our guest today. And James, they say that a bail-in is for the sake of keeping a bank afloat. I really don't have any interest in donating my money to keep a bank afloat. And my question is, how do they, through banking regulations, when you go to the bank and you thought you had $5,000 there, in the bank, and you go and you find out you have only three, and they say, oh, well, we needed that to keep the bank afloat. How do they do that by banking regulation?
They do it, in a nutshell, by convincing you that what you are doing when you put your money in the bank is giving your money for safekeeping that they go and put in a vault somewhere that they have physically stored there at the bank and that they can pull out of their savings there. But that, of course, is not what banking is actually about. And this is a very basic point, and they obscure it with all manner of jargon and gibberish that they pull out of wherever it is they keep that jargon and gibberish stored in order to try to confuse people on this issue. So just as an example, that that white paper that I was talking about for the Bank for International Settlements in 2010, where they were writing about this bail-in idea, is actually titled Proposal to Ensure the Loss Absorbency of Regulatory Capital at the Point of Non-Viability, which is just the type of gobbledygook that will absolutely make no sense to anyone and will make people's eyes glaze over so that they don't even bother to read the document, which is, of course, is exactly the point. They don't want people to understand what banking is at a base level, because if they do, people would be up in arms in the streets and they would not tolerate this. Because ultimately, what you're doing, you're not putting your money in a vault somewhere for safekeeping, where they go and they take the cash out of the big pile in the back and bring it and give it to you when you want it. What you are actually doing is you are making a loan, a short-term loan, to a financial institution. And the key to this, and I think the way that we should understand it, is why do you get interest on your bank account? Why do you get interest, even if it's 0.01% or whatever ridiculously small rate it is? Why do they pay you for storing your money at the bank? It's because you're not storing money. You're providing them a loan, which then goes into their account as capital that they can use to create further loans and do all of the nonsense and casino gambling and stuff that they do behind the scenes. So that is the real secret to this. And that's why, at the end of the day, if the financial institution of the bank goes bankrupt, then just like in any other situation where all the creditors can be written down as need be to fulfill, to cover whatever they can as the institution goes bankrupt, so too can the creditors who are the depositors. The people who deposit their money there are absolutely no different than just people who have loaned this bank money. And when people start to understand that, then I think they can start to understand that really, and at a fundamental level, we can rail against the banks, but the point at which we actually participate in that system is the point at which it has power over us. So the more that we give our money to the big banks, and we basically literally lend our money to them so that they can continue doing this financial wizardry behind the scenes, the more that we actually empower those banks. And what is the solution to that? Of course, it is to try to get our money out of those big banking institutions, the Wall Street fat cats, and trying to put it into something more local, something that would actually help to benefit people at the local level, or people generally, whether it be a credit union or what have you. And that's scary for a lot of people to do, because they think that there's some sort of stability in just the bigness of some of these financial institutions. Well, you know, a Bank of America will never go bankrupt, so it's okay, I can put my money there. But it's important to know that we are helping to fund our own enslavement when we put our money in that banking system, because ultimately that's what it is doing.
Ooh. We are funding our own enslavement. Oh, my goodness. You know, that reminds me of what I say all the time, is that we go and buy rope from the government to go and sit at the table and braid it to hang ourselves and our families with. And the banking system is just a part of that, isn't it?
It is. It is. But it's a linchpin part of it, a very crucial part of it, because, of course, the banks, at the end of the day, are also ultimately the ones in charge of the government, more or less. I mean, the government, as we all know, is just the political puppets that come in and out of office every few years, clearly not the ones who are fundamentally holding the reins of power. Where does the power lie? And unfortunately, in our society, it lies at the creation of money, the point of the creation of money. And where and how does that occur? That occurs through the banking system and through the power that these banksters are given by the power of their charters to create money out of nothing, to create money in the form of loans, supposedly to help the economy. Well, this helps to create a growing and vibrant economy. But of course, as we've seen over, especially over the last several years and the way this has all unfolded, it just means that we have created these institutions that are absolutely sacrosanct, and that now even the Attorney General, Eric Holder, has gone on record and admitted that some of these financial institutions are too big to be prosecuted. They are literally and formally and on the record above the law. So I think there's no question about where the real power in this society lies. And once again, to the extent that it is within our power to withdraw our money from that system, I think it's our moral duty to do so.
Wow. This goes back to the fraud of the system of Republicans versus Democrats. They're trying to keep us all in this game so that we can be pitted against each other. But there's so much more behind this, and this plays into this whole charade.
It does, doesn't it? I mean, it is just one big charade, and I think that there's so many different ways to examine it, and one of the ways that we can look at it is, for example, I mean, all of this squabbling over the U.S. debt is one thing, but just thinking about the issue of U.S. government debt and why it exists at all is a fundamental question that, of course, will never be touched on in any of the mainstream debate that's happening over this political wrangling. Oh, we should be cutting this program or that program in order to fund this, but as I'm sure Ellen Brown will go into in more detail on Thursday, the idea that there needs to be a government debt at all is just a creation, and it's a creation that obviously only helps to fund the banksters to whom this debt is actually owed at the end of the day. But of course, the government can, and in any other normal system, would actually just print what money it needs in order to fund whatever it needs, it deems valuable enough to fund. But of course, that system does not exist at the federal level in the United States and would never even be raised as a subject. And just as an example of the fact that the U.S. government, as the arm of these banksters, is the controlling driving force of the U.S. economy, you can look at spending, U.S. government spending as a percentage of GDP, which is raised from 8 or 9% back in 1900 to almost 40% of the economy. 40% of the size of the entire GDP of the country is government spending, which gives you at least some idea of the amount to which the government is intruding into every sector of the economy these days. Supposedly the freest economy in the world and the one that's furthest away from the central command and control economies of the old Soviet era and the like. But still, it's becoming more and more like that which it supposedly was fighting against. And just another example of that, just in the last few days, Lumber Liquidators was just raided by the Department of Homeland Security because apparently suspicion that they might be illegally importing certain types of wood that has been regulated against, apparently, by some federal regulation. And even though they haven't actually filed any formal charges yet or provided any proof of this, they raided the company, and overnight the company's stock value went down 11%. So this is the type of economic warfare that happens each and every day, and we've seen this happen before. In fact, even with this specific issue, we saw a guitar manufacturer raided a few years ago for apparently using wood that wasn't properly regulated by the federal government or what have you, or supposedly so. And unfortunately, they can literally take down a business just by going in and raiding it and then coming out a few years later after all the court wrangling goes on to say, oops, well, sorry, we didn't mean to do that. And in the meantime, they can basically wreak havoc and destruction on whatever sector of the economy they want. Because at the end of the day, this is the sort of mafia syndicate that's at the top of this, and if you're not playing ball with the mafia, then they have ways of trying to take you down.
Now, I would like to have you make a stab at this question, and that is, where is all the money going? When the banks are missing the money, when these incredibly alternative energy companies get billions of dollars, Cylindra or whatever, and that's missing, and there's $3 trillion missing at the Pentagon the day before September 11th. Where is all this money going? Seriously, we're talking huge amounts of money. In Iraq, they said, well, they had a C-130 full of money, and it's gone. We just don't know what happened to it. Where does all this money go?
I think if I could answer that question with any degree of precision, I would probably be in mortal danger for my life. So maybe it's a good thing that I can't specifically tell you where it goes. I can't tell you who it goes to. But the fact that it ends up in the hands of a very small select group of private individuals, I don't think this has anything fundamentally to do with the kind of governmental political puppets that are paraded before us every few years. They certainly get their slice of the pie. And we see, for example, the Clintons, net worth going up tens of millions of dollars since they left office, with all their worldwide, you know, speaking circuit fees and all of that, and the book deals and everything else that they get insured for life, basically, to make sure they have a nice cushy time of it. But still, that's a drop in the bucket when it's compared to the, as you say, trillions and trillions of dollars that are being absconded from the Pentagon and or filtered out the back door in various ways and or created as debt and then paid off to these banksters. So it does end up in the private hands of the private banking families that have been in charge of the banking system for a long time. And of course, I mean, people will point to the Rothschilds and the Lazard Frere and those types of classical banking families that have been involved in this system for centuries. But as to the specifics of where that ultimately ends up, again, I really could only venture speculation at this point, and I'm not sure it would be particularly informed speculation. But I think, again, part of my message is to say that I know it is absolutely fascinating for people to try to look for the head of the Hydra here so that they can try to, well, if we just discover that, then we can just cut off the head and everything will be better. But I think the more fundamental point, once again, is that we fund this system. We actually work for this system when we invest in their companies, in the stock market, when we put our money in the financial institutions, when we buy in the products that are made by these corporations that are part of the system. Every single day we are choosing to be a part of this system that is this gigantic beast. And I guess we could look for the head and try to cut it off, but I think given human nature and what it is, if you cut off a head of this beast system, there will be another one that will grow to take its place overnight. I mean, I'm sure are thousands upon thousands of people who would be lusting into those positions of power should they ever become available. Whereas I think the more fundamental part of what we can actually do is withdraw our money, our time, our energy, our consent from this system in order to build up the alternative system that has nothing to do with their beast system, with has nothing to do with this financial hydra that they've created. And again, this has to start locally, and it has to be done with like-minded individuals coming together through peaceful, voluntary interactions. And I know that sounds like a pipe dream, and maybe at the end of the day it is, but I'm not going to give up on that dream quite yet. I think that's where we have to start, and that's ultimately where I think the saving grace is going to be, rather than trying to chase after the head of the Hydra, because they've had centuries to create a million layers to this onion, and people can get lost their entire lives trying to peel back those layers. I say get rid of the onion. It doesn't taste that good anyway. Let's create a nice, happy, healthy apple that we can all eat together and enjoy.
I like that. Get rid of the onion and get an apple. Oh my goodness, I could not agree with you more. Now, I know that you live in Japan. I would be remiss if I did not ask you, what are you being told about Fukushima? What kind of agenda is going on there to keep you all pacified about this?
Well, interestingly enough, we just had an ex-prime minister come out recently here and accuse the current prime minister, Shinzo Abe, of lying to the International Olympic Committee in order to try to make sure that Tokyo got the 2020 Olympics. So that's a pretty major thing when you have an ex-prime minister accusing another of basically lying outright. And of course, he's right. Of course, Abe actually did say that basically the situation is under control and there's nothing to worry about. And immediately you had TEPCO officials and other government officials coming out and saying, well, actually, there are leaks going on and there are concerns and things of this nature. So they had to immediately backpedal from his statements. But whatever it was, it worked. And of course, the Tokyo Olympics are going ahead. So I guess in 7 years now, I guess we'll find out what kind of patchwork quilt they're going to try to put over this problem. And it is going to be, I think, a comedy of errors, and hopefully it will be more comedy and less tragedy, but there is always the possibility of that. And right now, the big next stage that they're going to come up against is the removing of the spent fuel rods from the Reactor 4 building. For people who don't know, this has Reactor 4 had a used spent fuel pool that was above the reactor itself that contains, I think, over 1,300 spent fuel rods, but the term spent fuel rod makes it sound like it's not nuclear, not radioactive at this point, but of course it still is. And in fact, if the reactor 4 building were to collapse or there was some sort of structural failure, that would actually cause a release of radiation orders of magnitude, tens of thousands of times larger than Hiroshima, beyond even anything that was experienced at Chernobyl. So that would be a huge event. So they're going to have to start removing these fuel rods from this building, which is already unstable, and could collapse in the event of another earthquake. So they've set up the equipment to do this. They've done some test runs to take out some of the, one or two of the fuel rods. But now they're going to have to start doing this in earnest. And Arne Gundersen at Fairwinds.org, who's been covering this, a former nuclear power reactor chief and someone who knows what he's talking about, decades of experience, says that this is an extremely dangerous process. It's basically like trying to remove cigarettes from a crumpled cigarette pack without touching any of the other cigarettes, because if these rods even come within a short distance of each other, it could set off a chain reaction and actually trigger the type of event we're trying to avoid. So it is it's a pretty dangerous situation, and someone like Arne Gundersen has said that, you know, if they lose containment or if something goes wrong with this fuel rod process, basically we would be looking at evacuating the Northern Hemisphere. So
absolutely. We had Jerry Peterman on the show who said it's impossible for them to remove those rods in the manner in which they want to do it. It's impossible. So what's going to happen? Who knows? But I think it's worse than we're being told. More of the fraud. We'll be back after this 3-minute break. What's going on with gold and silver? We'll ask James Corbett. Stay tuned to the Power Hour. Joyce Riley. Welcome back to Power Hour. Thank you for joining us. Caring about your world. Just to let you know, tomorrow we're going to be talking to Eric Llewellyn, Dr. Eric Llewellyn from the UK. He is he creates vitamins and mineral supplements, but he creates the highest quality, and he talks to us about the combinations of those items and why they are so good. Jeff Mayer will also join us on how to engage local and county citizens in their defense of their federal freedoms and their freedoms and rights, constitutional liberties. He will be joining us from libertyzone.org tomorrow also. We're talking to James Corbett today, corbettreport.com. He writes for Corbett Report, an international forecaster. We thank him so very much for giving us a common sense, easy to understand what the heck is going on in the financial arena, because they keep us thinking that it's too hard for us to understand. So just sit down, be good little people, and let us take your money out of the bank whenever we need to. James, gold and silver, what's going on in the commodities markets? It seems like it's just opposite of what it should be.
You know, that's exactly what I'm sitting here thinking, and I'm just looking at the markets from this morning, and in the early morning hours, we had gold trading around the 1340 mark, and then in the last few hours, the few hours before trading started, it dipped down as low as 1320. And I'm not understanding why that's happening, other than simply to say manipulation. And of course, we know manipulation happens in the gold and silver markets all the time, and that's just par for the course. But usually, there's at least a kind of plausible cover story for the way that they're manipulating it. In this case, it seems to be exactly opposite to what should be happening. As you noted, the Dow, for example, is down up to 100 points on the day so far right now because of the worries about the shutdown and all of this. And in those times of worry, generally, the money is going out of the equities, out of stocks, and into the traditional forms of value, which would be, or the traditional stores of value, which would be bonds. But of course, why would you put money in bonds if there's going to be a government shutdown, or gold and silver and precious metals? So theoretically, we should be seeing gold taking off today, but it's suddenly being repressed. The only theory that I've seen online that makes anything approaching sense is that there's the fear that this will be a general slowdown of the economy because of the government shutdown, which will affect commodity prices. There will be less demand for commodities because of the slowdown that's a result of the shutdown. And because of that, well, gold has been recently trading more like a commodity than a store of value. So it's losing some of its commodity value. I guess that makes a type of sense, but I still think it should be going the other way. So I would be surprised if the government shuts down and we don't see gold taking off from here.
Yes. And I have to ask the question again. You said gold is being manipulated. Is there some giant gold guru who says it's only going to go up $40 today, or it's going to drop $100 a day today, or don't let it above the 1340 mark? I mean, how do they manipulate gold?
I think a good example is what we saw earlier this year when we saw the huge takedown in gold, where it dropped hundreds of dollars in the span of a couple of days. And that was accomplished at the time by, as near as we can tell, some trades that were put in the early morning hours. So there was a huge amount of shorts that flooded the market in the early trading morning trading hours that basically triggered the type of financial tsunami that can be triggered, because everyone has their stops at different levels. But if you can push a price down below one of those stops, then everyone starts selling. And once you start that panic, then the price will drop a lot further. So I think it's not necessarily that one person is deciding this, but that this is a type of market transaction that can be triggered.
Awesome program. Thank you so much for joining us today. We look forward to having you join us very soon. Thank you, James Corbett, CorbettReport.com. Thank you, sir.
Anytime you need me, Joyce.
Oh, thank you. We appreciate you so much. You all have a blessed day. Go out there. Focus on today. Live in the moment. Separate yourself from the system. Remember, get our t-shirt. The only winning move is not to play their game. Have a blessed day. We'll see you tomorrow. Y'all bless you all. And we love you at the Power Hour. We'll see you tomorrow.